Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I'm answering this morning a question that Mara asked me. So, Mara, raise your hand. Everybody say thank you, Mara.
Thank you, Mara.
Thank you, Mara.
Mara said a few weeks ago, she said, why don't you teach on miracles? How do we answer the question to someone who is not a believer in God, why do you Christians believe in miracles? Is that pretty close to what you are asking? Mara and John and Gloria go down to the 3rd Street Promenade in the Heathen... And Ted in the Heathen Republic of Santa Monica very often. And answer questions as people go by. And so I assume that you're talking about going down there often. Yeah, okay. I want to start out, I want to make this an interactive time, so as long as you keep it on topic, I want a lot of questions. So, first question is, what is a miracle? I'm opening it up.
Beyond naturalism.
Can you describe that a little better, be more specific?
An act of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.
An act of God, okay. All right, now I'm going to start throwing holes in these as you bring them up. All right? John?
I think there's three types of miracles. One is truly supernatural, where it overrides all natural physics. It's beyond natural laws. We know it in our space-time continuum.
Okay.
Then there's the kind of miracle which uses the physics of the universe, but the laws are being used that result or occur where they would not have resulted.
So a little more under the radar.
Without God's manipulating
okay.
those laws. So that's two, and I forget the third one.
Okay, well, what's the third one?
It's not bad.
Yeah, third one he would describe is sustaining miracles. The mere fact that the laws of physics stay constant, which is kind of fine-tuned,
okay.
such a fine degree to support human life.
Okay, I will take more, but let me put a hole in what everybody said so far.
Well, thank you.
No problem. It's easy, John. No.
I walked into that.
Yes, you did. If God sustains the physical laws, like Dave was just talking about, that we see, then isn't everything a miracle? So how do we distinguish between the miraculous and the non-miraculous?
The first answer was the correct one. A miracle? I mean, look.
The first answer being what?
I was 5 years old, and they told me what a miracle was, okay? It's like when an angel shows up, okay? That's against reality, against the laws of science, okay?
Okay.
That's my 5-year-old Sunday school.
Okay, so something that basically breaks into the natural flow of cause and effect. Dan, who had a question? Somebody was going to say something over there. Al, I'm surprised. You have something to say.
Well, I was just going to say I was out on a date last night. That was a miracle.
Yes. Good. All right. Now, there's a problem. There's also a problem with this definition. And here's the problem. How did people think about miracles in biblical times? When the people who wrote the Bible... What words, does the word miracle appear very often in the Bible?
Yes, it does, in the New Testament.
Mostly, the description is what? Dan?
They said, this must be from God.
Why?
Because nobody can do that unless it's God.
So it had to do with what people could do, not that it broke some natural law. Okay.
A work of power.
A work of power. Okay. If, how do I say this? Okay, if it's a work, a breaking of the natural law, did people in biblical times have an understanding of natural law?
No.
So, we're going back to this culture thing that I've been talking about then. If we're going to understand the Bible the way that it was written... Can we understand miracles to be a break in natural law? In in biblical times, it was thought that everything that happened in the world, the sun coming up, plants growing, John sitting there, everything that happens was due to spirits, demons, angels. The concept of natural law, the concept of cause and effect, that if this happens, this will always follow if the circumstances are the same, was not something that was understood until basically the 1600s. So, Tim.
I feel like although that is true, they still counted Moses smacking the rock and having water come out to be a miracle, because normally you don't get water like that.
That's
if
right.
So turning, if Jesus had in fact turned rocks into bread, it would have been a miracle, because rocks don't normally turn into bread by themselves.
That's right. But the cause of it turning into bread was seen as God doing it. The cause of everything else that normally happens was seen as minor spirits doing it. Yes, sir.
Well, I didn't know my answer was incorrect. Cause when I was 6 years old in Sunday school, and doing my memory verses, they told me what a miracle was, and I knew what it was because it was something God did. So, am I wrong now?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, and I'm not saying I'm throwing this open so that everybody can have a chance to think about it. Here's a description of a miracle from one of the papers that I was studying to do this. What I want you guys to do is read this description and poke your own holes in it. See if you can find a problem with this. A true miracle is an event in the external world brought about by the immediate agency or the simple volition of God, operating without the use of means capable of being discerned by the senses, and designed to authenticate the divine commission of a religious teacher and the truth of his message. It's a miracle that anyone would need a definition that long, I think. Okay, can you find some holes in that?
Mainly just one part, operating without the use of means capable of being discerned by the senses. For example, parting the Red Sea, God used a very strong wind from a particular direction to part those waters. He used he was manipulating natural law.
That's right.
Maybe the timing of that wind would not have occurred until maybe 20 years later, but he made it happen at that time. But it was using a natural process discernible by the senses.
Very good. That's right. Dave?
Invoking the scientific method, you need to define the frame of reference. Like your previous one, when you said, what is a miracle? Your answers were all present day, and then you responded by saying, biblical historical values. Are we talking about the past, or talking about the present, or are you doing both?
I'm doing both, and I will get there. Right now, I'm
using on purpose. Thank you.
I am. Right now, I'm blowing it up, and we're going to put it back together. Dan?
This could apply to the devil.
Yes. Well, before the first comma, a true miracle is an event in the external world brought about by the immediate agency or the simple volition of God. Again, everything we see, natural law, is that. So according to this, everything is a miracle, which is fine. That's fine. But let's go to Merriam-Webster. An extraordinary event manifesting divine intervention in human affairs. At least they kept it short. Can we put some holes in that? Is there a problem with that definition?
It doesn't address so many issues that cannot be easily addressed. Mainly, how do you define reality? It keeps getting redefined by the year. What is empirical? The word is hardly even used anymore. It was used a lot. Just for a couple of examples, they could go on and on. Major categories that need to be addressed within the definition.
Okay. And once again, this could apply to everything. Yes?
Two things. First, both definitions presume that it's initiated by God.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm not sure what's the scope of the discussion. Are we all assuming that we're approaching this from a Christian perspective?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Fine then. All right, keep going.
Okay. Thank you.
Is that what they mean there? By divine?
No.
We're going to get there.
What's the point of talking about miracles if we're already preaching to the choir?
I think I'm going to get there, and part of my purpose in doing this is that everyone we talk to may have a different view of what a miracle is, and I think bottom line is, defining a miracle is sort of like defining science. We sort of know when it is science and when it isn't. We know when it's a miracle and when it isn't, but defining it precisely is very difficult. The best definition that I could come up with was an act of God which has an effect of Him communicating with us in a way that He normally doesn't. Because if you look at the New Testament definitions for things that were miraculous, they were seen as signs and wonders, and they had a specific purpose to bring us, to make us aware that God was there, that He exists, and He's doing something specific. So the purpose wasn't to break a physical law. They weren't thinking about it in those terms. The purpose was God communicating with us about something special. Alan?
Well, so let's say, 2,000 years ago, an airplane flew over. Well, they would consider that a miracle, but not a miracle now. So would a miracle be a natural law used at the right time?
That's a great point, and I think so. Yes.
So then what about the turning of the water into wine or something like that? That's not a... you can't explain that naturally or the rock, getting the rock and the water coming up. There's a miracle that's beyond natural law.
Yep.
Is there a miracle that has a natural law, but at the right time?
Yes, it's about timing.
So those are two different types, don't they?
That's right. And so the point is, however God chooses to do it, the point is He's communicating with us. Right? He's telling us something. He's making a point. And I think that's more all-encompassing than any other description.
Isn't life itself a miracle in itself?
Yes. I agree. But again, if we're going to use the word miracle, it has to be as opposed to something else, not the non-miraculous. So when we talk about miracles, usually we're saying something specific that's different than the normal way God does it. But that's part of the fuzziness of trying to define it. We can legitimately say all of life, everything here is a miracle.
Yeah, but in the word it says, familiarity? Yeah, in the sense that you see everything that's going on, but at the same rate, because it's so common among people just ignore it and figure it's just an everyday occurrence.
Right.
You know, just the fact in the moon, the stars, and everything that grows together, you know, that's a miracle within itself.
Yes.
They pay no attention to it because they figure, okay, it's an everyday occurrence.
That's right.
There really is no real existence, no real explanation to explain.
For anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're going to get there. Mara gets special treatment because she started this. Okay.
I like your definition. That's a good answer to give to people. It's God's a certain way of communicating with us in a special way to show that He's there. That's good. But he had a good point. How about when we go to the Bible, and it could be the devil who's doing miracles. How do we know that's God? Because he could, and God tells us, you know, that he does miracles. So how can we say it's God? Because somebody else could pull out, hey, maybe the devil did it.
Does anybody have an answer for that?
I don't.
Discernment concerning the miracle or communicated by it.
I'm talking about somebody who knows nothing about Christianity. We're talking atheists here.
Jackie?
And you knew that. Isn't a miracle something positive, good for us?
Well, there's times when, I don't know, was Sodom and Gomorrah good? Well, he brought fire and brimstone down from heaven. I would say, yeah.
John? Miracle.
The devil can do a quote positive or good miracle with the ultimate goal of reinforcing wrong doctrine or whatever,
right?
For a bad purpose. So a miracle has to ultimately be for a God intended purpose.
I don't want to spend too long on this because it's not where I want to go, but Ruth. Okay.
Satan masquerades as angel of light, so he comes across like the mediums and the ones who are fortune tellers. They come across as positive as light, but the difference is at the end, you can tell the difference. Not in the beginning. In the beginning, they're masquerading. At the end, they take off their mask and there they are.
Good. Dan?
If they contradict the Bible, that's how you know.
I think that's the big test.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's how we can know, because we know the Bible. But if you're talking to somebody who doesn't know, and most Christians don't even know the Bible, first of all, but I'm talking just a person, a skeptic or an atheist, doesn't. I mean, that's all hogwash to them.
Okay.
And then you have these...
That's true, but we're trying to talk about miracles, and then later we can talk about how do we discern between what's done by good.
Then what about these guys who lift up? I meet people who yogis and that, that say they heal, they raise people from the dead. Well, they would consider that a miracle, but I ask them if they believe in Jesus. Oh no, they believe in Maharishi. You know, so there's all those.
Well, and I think my point today, Mara, is trying to how can we talk about miracles existing in this world? Now, I'm talking about miracles by God, but the question really is, how can the supernatural exist, which would include the dark side? So the question really is, how do we talk about miracles? Okay, the first I'm going to start with some. Let's take some answers here. Where do we go? What's the first thing when we're talking to somebody who doesn't believe in miracles? What's our attitude supposed to be like? Listen, listen, love, and learn. When they say, if someone tells you they don't believe in miracles, what kind of miracles don't you believe in? Listen to what they're saying. Say a prayer. How can I help this person? How can I communicate? But you cannot just start spouting. You have to listen to them. Learn from them. Maybe there's a way they're seeing it that you hadn't thought about before. Okay? This is a really good way to just approach life.
Well, you know, one that Hugh Ross uses a lot, I would insert affirm. You know, affirm, oh, you've made a good point.
I couldn't get an L word out of affirm, so.
I'll look it up.
Okay. What do they mean by miracle? They may think that a miracle is something that happens in the world right now. Okay. They may be thinking of the miracles that the Bible talks about, that Jesus talks about. They may be talking about miracles versus science. So when they say, I don't believe in miracles, it's like saying, I don't believe in evolution. Well, what do you mean by evolution? What do you mean by miracles? What's your definition? Talk to them about what they're talking about, not just the first thing that comes to your mind. Do you believe you don't believe in miracles? Okay, why not? Tell me why you don't believe in miracles. Alan.
Well, again, I'm being... Say certain miracles like the parting of the Red Sea. I mean, I would say, do we know for sure that we parted? I mean, or the smoke, the fire, the pillar of fire from God, because apparently I've heard that's a military tactic to create a fire at night to blind the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're talking about miracles, it could be based on something that really wasn't a miracle, but through generations and generations, it appears to be.
Well, and I'm not up here trying to prove any particular miracle. I'm talking about the miraculous in general. Should we believe in miracles? How should someone who doesn't believe in God say how can we say to them belief in miracles is more rational than not believing in miracles? Not a specific one. Ted?
I just finished a course in cosmology from RTV.
Mm-hmm.
And in there, the extreme physicalist argument was put forth in that there are multiple universes with multiple Rosses and Peds and so on.
Boy, that's awful.
So if given a large enough multiverse, if you were to see a cow flying upside down or a dead person rise from the dead, it would not be a miracle. It would just be a chance occurring due to all the multitudinous infinite number of universes. There's a Ted there wearing a green hat instead of this black one.
There's a Ted with hair.
And so on. It's ridiculous.
Yes.
But there are a subset of us humans that believe that. or maybe don't even believe it, they just put it forth. If they were to actually see a cow flying upside down, they would find it unusual and call it a miracle. Yet their mouth comes these stupid words. There's an infinite number of universes, and that cow is not unusual.
Well, we're going to get to that argument. Warren?
I'm going to go back to Leibniz's question. Why does anything exist?
We're
why
getting there, too.
Rather than nothing.
You guys should be teaching this.
And if you're stuck in naturalism, if, you know, anything that can be a repeated experiment, et cetera, you can never get there. And we think that's also true for the origin of life, but it's definitely true for the origin of anything or everything.
Yeah, you're right, and we're going to get there.
The multiverse, by the way, is the extreme example of what needs explaining and is not self-explanatory.
And it needs more explanation, not
and
less.
So the whole thing is a miracle.
The multiverse would be a miracle. It's beyond the natural realm.
One of the first ways that we can start talking about miracles is to talk about, start discussing the existence of God. One of the questions you want to ask is, do you believe in God? Do you believe in a personal God? Because, you know, Mark Perez has talked a lot about worldview. If you do not believe in God, just what Ted was saying, you're going to be inclined to not see anything as a miracle. If something happens that is completely unexplainable, you're going to say, we just don't understand it yet. You're going to say, well, there's the many worlds hypothesis, and we can explain it. We can explain it that way. You're going to say, it didn't really happen. It was, you just imagined it, or we had a mass hallucination. If you do believe in God, then miracles are possible. Miracles are reasonable. We tend to see everything as miraculous. So start talking about worldview. Do you believe in God? Do you not believe in God? How would you try to convince someone who doesn't believe in God of the miraculous? And that's kind of what your question is. That's sort of where we're going. Susan?
Do you believe in Jesus versus?
I mean that later. I don't mean it right now at this point in the argument. Right, right.
We have to be careful of the God of the gas trap.
Yes.
And just, you know, everything is due to God. Well, this will get a secular scientist frothing at the mouth.
Yeah.
And so we need to say you're right. That we need to look for natural explanations wherever we can.
Right. We're gonna get there, Warren.
But then we put the shoe on the other foot. There's naturalism of the gap.
Yes.
And
there's ways to argue, because everything, they can't say it's God of the gaps every time we make a point. And I'm gonna get to that, because there's some arguments that you can't make that claim about. Okay. So the existence of God in the first place is primary in how to approach this question of miracles. Can you all see that? Okay, here's a really powerful one. Share your own personal experiences. How many people have had what they would say is a true physical miracle happen in their life? That if someone else heard it and believed it, they would be able to say that's probably a true miracle. That has happened to me, and I'm going to share it. And I've never shared it in front of a group of people before. In fact, I haven't mentioned it to probably more than 5 people in my whole life.
Can I tell a story about what happened to me last year?
Yes, Steve, but let me go first, okay? Okay. When I was growing up, I was raised in a Christian family. My dad worked for World Vision. My mom was a teacher. My mom loved just street people. She was always having people in who needed help, who needed the Lord. My dad had a lot of friends through World Vision. He always had business people in, and my world as a child was with the adult friends of my parents in many ways. I never felt confident with people my own age, but I loved being around adults. And so whenever my parents had these people over, they'd invite me in, you know, and I was timid and shy, and I'd go in there. I was like probably 9 when this happened, and I'd shake their hand, and then I'd leave because I didn't really have much to say. But I was comfortable sort of with that. There was this one man who my dad had over. My mom and dad were talking with him. I think there were a couple other people in the room. It was in the living room in our house in Burbank where I grew up. And one of the people there was a healer. That's what my parents described him as. And I walked in, and I was standing there like this in front of all the adults in the living room. And this man said to me, "Would you please," he didn't even say his name. He said, "Would you please come over here and sit in this chair?" Okay, so I went, sat in a chair. And he picked up my feet. He said, "Put your backside tight against the chair." And he picked up my feet, and he pulled them, you know, he lifted them up and held them in front of him like this. And I was square against the chair, and he said, "One of your legs is longer than the other." And I could see it. It was about an inch and a half. And he wasn't playing any tricks with angle or anything. I could see it. And he looked at me, he looked me in the eye, and he said, "In the name of Jesus, grow." And one of my legs, it was the right leg, it just moved. Over about 3 seconds, it grew. And then it stopped.
Was he the Oral Roberts or A.A. Allen type?
Well, I don't know. I don't even know his name to this point. Now, I've thought about this over the years. I've heard people who are heard of people who are charlatans who use that exact thing. There's a way to manipulate it. But the reason that I know that it was real in my life was my hip was sore for weeks with my body compensating for the difference. So that actually happened in my life. I have to try to explain that. Now, for me, it's easy. God did that. And we talk about God using miracles as a way to communicate to us. What he communicated to me was, I'm here, I'm real. This isn't going to happen all the time, but this is something for you to hang on to remember, that's always going to be with you. Dan?
When you had before that, any limping, or did you know that you were short of one, that would know that now you don't have that. When you before that were limping, when you know your leg was short.
No, I never noticed it. I never noticed it. But most people who have, they say that almost everybody's one leg is a little longer than the other. It's just not something you notice unless, you know, there was a way to measure it. Ted,
I was wondering, have you, you know, you've been to physicals lately, you know, since you were 9 years old. What do the doctors say since that time on that issue?
I never went to the doctor a lot. I've never shared this. This has been a private thing for me, and it just was not something I wanted to talk about. And so now I'm sharing it. I want to take one more comment, and then I want to ask something. Warren?
You included the word physical in your description of a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
And I have experienced what I think is a miracle in my own case that was not physical, the miracle of deliverance. And so I think there's those kinds of things.
I do too. I think every time we get answered prayer, it's a miracle.
Concerning miracles, I have several miracles up in my life, and I can share.
Well, that's my next question. I would like, all of you that raised your hand, would a couple of you be willing to talk about something that happened to you? Keep it about a minute long if you can.
Why don't you
stand up? What's your name, sir?
My name is Everton Davis.
Everton Davis, go ahead.
Well, when I was a kid, there used to be I grew up in Canada, and there used to be a hill that goes up like this from one end to the other, and vice versa. And at the very middle, what I did, I rode my, brought my bike from the very top of the hill, and I waited for the light to change at the very bottom. And I rode as fast as I can going down the hill, figuring by the time I get there, I'm going to be able to just go all the way up. I thought I was actually struggling. And while I was going down, big truck was going through the light, got the light changing up back on because with the alarm right down. And while I was going through the light, the truck was going through. And my bike went in underneath the bottom of the truck, and I've seen the wheel spinning. And an angel of God pulled me out and started my bike, stand right beside the truck, and the truck continued flowing. Okay? And there's not a soul on the planet to tell me differently, because I know I felt I see that for myself. I didn't know why, but I realized throughout my entire life, God's been saving me from things. I mean, I've been in situations when I've been shot at point blank range, and it's like watching a Matrix movie. You know? The bullet just grazed me, and it's how God's doing, it's never myself doing. Then I realized later on in life why it's the purpose was for God's purpose to be used for me. You know, like you said in Proverbs, we're supposed to be his daily their life, we need to commune with him, or we don't commune with him.
I'd like to change something.
Go ahead, Steve.
Last year, around this time, October of last year, I was at the doctor's office, and I went to the use restroom, and somehow I fell and hurt my hip right here, and was bleeding, and someone called the paramedics, and they rushed me to the emergency room, and luckily I had to have stitches only, and then from that time it was no more pinch. It was an act of God that saved me from the being pinched permanently. It was an act of God that rescued me from the pinch.
Thank you, Steve. Mark, would you mind sharing your experience? Good. Oh, with the motorcycle.
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody else want to share a personal story like that?
My name is Bob Marankis.
Bob, why don't you stand up?
I think we all should have had our hands up because I believe God doesn't always look for the credit, and things happen to us we don't even know, maybe on a daily basis. Answers a prayer from others we don't know. Non-answers, sometimes God does miraculous without a prayer, and that's one of the definitions of the answer to prayer, one of the main ones. That would probably be in a different class. This class, we look at everything as a miracle, and other people that don't examine physical so much and scientific comma, I mean, dash, creationist way. Anyway, the one I want to bring up, because it's poignant to a point of whatever, because I was serving in a way, I was painting the church in Santa Monica where I was going for almost 20 years, and I'd started to find out 5:30 from the valley, Van Nuys. 5:30 is the optimum time to leave. If you leave later, try to slow down before. It's still dark and nasty. We're all doing about 55 to 60, but only about a car length away because everybody's used to it. And it was hairy at first when I started to do it. But after a few days, you get used to it, you know, because we're all into this pattern. And I felt it was relatively safe because we're all have the same intent. Nobody's getting out. People slow down slowly and get over. And it's still too close. Only about a car length and a half. It's 55, 60. And one day, I'm going down there, and I feel like slowing down. I just feel like it. And I start slowing down. And after about a second or two, I look in the rearview mirror. When I see this guy's face behind me, and it's getting angry, I'm figuring. Sure enough, I could see him starting to tense up to show us, what are you doing, you know? Because somebody's going to take the space in front of you. Now I'm about 4 or 5 car lanes, and I'm still looking at him, but I'm feeling safe. It's also, I think this is part of it, feeling really safe. And also, I'm kind of hyper aware of everything. And I'm looking at the mirror, and I notice in front something's happening, and I see his face before I look in front, his jaw dropped and his eyes popped open because the cars in front of me, after about 8 seconds, were just looking like a slow motion pinball machine. 3 or 4 cars spinning around, and if the Holy Spirit hadn't slowed me down concomitantly, I look over to the right, the guy next to me was doing the same thing I was. I didn't realize it. And we both looked at each other with awe, and we both kind of looked up for a half a second.
Wow.
And we both knew it was God. And then this guy behind me. That's one of the things I also want to say to this. When God does a miracle, I've noticed, I
as they go by, as they come more and more, there's always a God ripple, I call it, where others get blessed, like dropping something in a stream, you get waves emanating everywhere, where whoever gets touched gets a blessing somehow. And I've rarely seen something that could be more easily called a miracle by more people, but you don't see a whole lot of people, whatever touches, they get blessed. Just hearing about it, even.
Thanks. It's interesting that the two examples both involve traffic.
Well, it is L.A.
It is L.A. That's what it is. All right. So we can talk about our own personal experience when it comes to miracles. People can't really argue that. They can tell you you're crazy and you imagined it, but they can't really say to you that did not happen. If that's part of your personal experience, that's a big reason it probably happened in the first place, was so that you could share that experience. Okay, next one. Ask them, okay, if you don't believe in God, what would a miracle look like to you? Is there anything that could happen in the physical world that if you saw it and you said, you would say, that was truly a miracle. I don't believe in God, but that was a miracle. Can anybody think of something? What would convince even an atheist that a miracle had happened? Mark?
I heard Michael Shermer talk about the great questions one time, and the answer he gave is, you know, if I saw somebody that had amputated legs, and while they were sitting there before me, the legs sprouted out of their body, that would confirm for him that that was a miracle. Because that would be inexplicable, it would be totally a violation of physical law. So for even Michael Shermer, as wild and skeptic as he is, he claimed that was a miracle.
So even he had a threshold.
Yeah.
Anybody else?
Well,
Warren?
But I have to comment about Shermer. Although he has a lot of Christian friends, by the way. But what I've sensed in his definition is to narrow it down so that it would be impossible to meet. And I sense a spirit of cynicism. And cynicism is not a worldview. And I sense that he doesn't have a worldview. But
I think everybody has a worldview. It just doesn't include God.
I was not able to detect his so far.
Okay.
But I was going to make a point, and it's gone.
Okay. Okay. I think. Yes.
What about Benny Hinn, the miracle worker, or perceived quote?
Yeah, I don't know about it enough to have an opinion about it. All I can say is I know there's charlatans out there. I know there's people who claim to be Christians who perform miracles. And they are performing basically magic tricks, explainable by physical law, but they just look they look real.
So you're not Christians, you're magicians, huh?
Yeah, that's right, Steve.
But how can you tell them? True miracle work, Christian people working for God from the magician.
Well, I think that has to do with what the Bible says about discerning the spirits. I think it takes a lot of prayer, it takes a lot of thinking about it, really studying it, analyzing it, staying open to it. There's not an easy answer to that. Ruth? Yeah, that's right. Ted?
Remember Jesus gave the story or the events about Lazarus and the rich man?
Mm-hmm.
And the rich man told Abraham, you know, let me go back and tell my brothers. And Abraham told the rich man in Jesus' story, even if you were to return from the dead, they would not believe.
That's right. So there are some there are some people for whom, no matter what happened, they're not going to believe. And that's part of the reason Jesus didn't do the miracle, was because he knew it would be wasted. There's that communication part aspect of it again. Warren?
I remember my point.
Okay.
and again, it goes back to origins, to beginnings. The laws of physics, the rationality of the universe.
You're ahead of me, Warren. Let me get there. You've been really good about being two steps ahead. Yeah, but yeah, I'm going to do that. I think It's one of the reasons there are resurrections from the dead in the Bible. It's because that's one of the things, if you are open to it at all, if somebody's resurrected from the dead, you cannot explain that, I don't think, by a multi-world explanation. You can't explain it by, well, that's just normal physics, we just don't understand it yet. I don't think there's any explanation for that. I think no matter how you analyze that in any time period, it's truly miraculous. Only God can raise people from the dead. And as far as Michael Shermer's objection, there's stuff in the Bible that's close. A man with a withered hand, whose hand was healed. It didn't grow a limb, but it's similar. It's similar to that. So there's times when God uses, when Jesus uses miracles that are so spectacular, nobody can argue it, you would think. Raising from the dead is a good example. Okay, here's where you're ahead of me. This is very good. Areas of science where we are moving farther and farther from a naturalistic explanation. You can say, okay, you don't believe in miracles? What about miracles? What about things that we're studying in science that the more we study them, the less explainable they are by natural law? Now, who can think of some examples? Warren, now you can talk.
Intelligence in the cell.
Okay. Very good.
The laws of physics and the rationality of mathematics that matches it. Teleology, fine-tuning.
Mm-hmm.
As Hugh Ross says, these guys are back so far in the corner. Now, the only thing they have left is the multiverse, which is not an out because it's not self-explanatory.
Origins. The further they study, the more they have to go to aliens and astrobiology.
Somebody make that man a sandwich here. here's the list that I came up with. And three of them involve origins. There's a lot of them. Origin of the universe. It looks like the universe, as all the stuff came together in the Big Bang, it was so finely tuned. Everything, every characteristic about it had to be within a very precise range for us to be able to be here 13 billion years later to talk, to analyze it, to talk about it. You've got to, and the more we study this, the more parameters we find that have to be fine-tuned. So what you can say is, look at the origin of the universe. At first we thought this was a pretty simple question from a scientific standpoint. The more we study it, the further and further and further away we get from a naturalistic explanation. Therefore, it is reasonable to postulate that an intelligent creator arranged this 13 billion years ago. Okay? Origin of life.
You're not going back far enough.
13.7 billion. What's 0.7 billion years? It's only 700 million years.
Try God's scale.
Okay. Origin of life, same thing. The probabilities of that event happening by itself, we know so much about that now. We've all heard the numbers. The probability of those chemicals coming together in some way that wasn't directed are immensely, impossibly large, and every month, every year, that number gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. So once again, it looks like we're getting further and further and further away from an explanation for these things. Origin of man, same thing. We're so different from the animals in so many different ways. You can't explain that from an evolutionary perspective. Origin of nature of consciousness. This is one that Hugh doesn't talk about too often, but it's really fascinating. To me, I think God has a great sense of humor. The greatest, best, most personal evidence that each one of us have that there is a supernatural world out there is the fact that we have a consciousness, an awareness of ourself, where we can even analyze the question. I don't think we will ever get to a naturalistic explanation of why there is a me inside of me that's up here talking to you people. I have a memory. There's
a self-awareness,
a picture in my head of all of you. If we're just physical beings, I don't think you can explain that from just a physical explanation. I think the fact that I'm speaking to you, the fact that you're listening, the fact that we have a consciousness is evidence that there is more, right there is evidence that there's more to this world than just a naturalistic explanation for things.
Once in a while, the theistic evolutionist can remind us of a good point, and that is that even if life occurred through natural processes, that by itself is a miracle.
Yes.
Our lives are a gift from God.
Okay. And it's interesting because these are the very same areas, those origin questions. These are the very same areas where the Bible says God has intervened, aren't they? God created the universe. God created life. God created man. God infused man with a God nature. Isn't that interesting? The very same areas where we are getting further and further from a naturalistic explanation are exactly the same areas that the Bible, written thousands of years ago, says God did it.
I think Hugh Ross is on to it.
Yes, Mal.
Those first three items you had up there, the origin of the universe, the origin of life, and the origin of humanity, I believe those are the three items that Hugh mentioned that were responsible for the famous atheist Anthony Flew coming to be a deist
at the end of his life.
Which I don't know how, that's a long way from being a Christian, but I thought that was interesting, those same three items.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm not going to take too many more questions because I want to get through a couple of points. Why is there order in the universe in the first place? Think about this. I used to just blow this off. This argument did not work for me. And then I really started to thinking about it. And I thought about it like this. Of all the billions of random ways that the universe could have come together, most of the ways that would have happened by natural causes without God would have been random, chaotic, and without order. A much smaller set would have included order and our ability to understand it. So look at just the fact that there is order and reason in the universe, that we can reason and that we can think about it. Doesn't that imply that there was a intelligence that put it together so that we could do that? Because it probably wouldn't have happened that way by itself. Alan.
Well, I think I've mentioned this before, but what if the Earth just won the lottery? In other words, there's billions and trillions of stars and planets, everything. Okay,
miracle. Okay, I'm going to go over here. Here's the answer here.
Oh, yeah.
Miraculous versus impossible odds. This is really important. Okay? Let me give you an example. This is a very powerful argument. This is one where we can argue from a positive sense. We can say, well, what about this? This makes total sense. Listen to this carefully. Everything in our everyday experience teaches us that any structure that is complex, think about your car, okay, and has parts that are highly specified in their design and construction. Think about your car. Think about the tire. How many ways could the tire fail? It could be too big, it could be too small, it could be made out of the wrong material, could not have any air in it, it could be made of the wrong material, it could not be round. Every part in the car, there's thousands and thousands of them, has to be specified within a small tolerance for the car to operate. Right? Everybody with me so far?
Yeah.
Everything in our everyday experience teaches us that any structure that is complex and has parts that are highly specified in their design and construction are purposefully designed by a conscious mind. We look at a car, there's no question that somebody designed it. Right? A conscious mind who has the means to build it. Therefore, it is reasonable to infer that biological systems which are complex and have parts that are highly specified in their design and construction are also designed by a conscious mind who has the means to build them. This is a very powerful analogy. Somebody says, you believe that it must have been a miracle for life to come into existence. You say, yes, that's right. The alternative are odds that are so impossibly long that it's not reasonable. Let's go back to that. Everything in our everyday experience teaches us that stuff that looks like this is designed. Right? So why would biological systems be any different? They got to be designed too. You use the same analogy. Does that make sense? I think this is a really strong argument. And the same argument can be made with information. Everywhere we look in our everyday experience at anything that contains information, man created it. Computers, books, media. Now, computers can make their own information, but you take it back far enough, man created the first computer. Everything that contains information was created by man. Now, we look at a single cell organism that we know looks like the first organism that ever existed. It has as much information in it as approximately as Darwin's Origin of Species book. So, it's the same argument. If everything in our everyday experience that has information in it was created by a conscious mind, and we look at biological systems that are full of information, isn't it reasonable to assume that it also was created by a conscious mind?
Those two points, design and information, are the crux arguments of Pozzerana's.
That's right.
Life in the lab.
Yeah. Same argument from something from nothing. We never, in our everyday experience, see something pop into existence from nothing, from literally nothing. So why is it reasonable to infer that something came from nothing at the origin of the universe? Hang on, Alan. It's the same argument. Here is where you can take charge of the argument. You can say, this is a reasonable thing to say. Now, you respond to that. We have to make sure that the argument we're making, we don't want to argue from a defensive standpoint. This is an argument that puts them on the defensive because they have to answer this. Okay. A creator is a more reasonable argument than impossible odds. In my opinion, that's the argument you want to make. Purely naturalistic worldviews are self-defeating. Imagine a universe where there was no spiritual world. There is no God. Everything that happens is a result of cause and effect. This happened because of the chain of events that were before it. Okay? Think about what that really means. It means that the neurons that are firing in my brain right now that's telling me what to say at any moment isn't because I've reasoned them out or I've thought about them. It's simply because of all the stuff that's happened before, and I really have no control over it.
So
the fact, this applies to you too, the fact that we have free will, the fact that we can reason, that we can think about it, means there's got to be something else there other than purely naturalistic causes. Because we're contravening that normal cause and effect flow.
That would mean there would be no life and there would be no death.
I agree. There would be no good, there'd be no evil. Everything would simply be just
exist.
That's right.
Isn't that what the atheists say?
And that's what they say. And yet they don't really act like that.
They rail against the bad.
Well, think about that. Atheists who don't believe in free will and only naturalistic cause and effect,
deterministic,
are writing a book to convince you otherwise. Now, if they really believed that, they would say,
right.
Everything just happens because it happens. Right. I can't convince anybody of anything. They would not write the book, so they don't really believe it.
A lot of people have made that point.
Yeah, okay. Now, here's an interesting point. I think divine intervention is similar to human intervention. I want to do a little display here. I'm going to take this tennis ball and I'm going to throw it at the wall over there. Just watch it. Okay, now, just leave it. Now, what did it do?
Fail.
Why did it do what it did? What was involved in getting that ball over there? What are all the different variables?
Force,
mass, resistance, the fact that I'm left-handed, spin, airflow, gravity. Okay. All right. Now let's try it one more time. Okay. Well, he was supposed to. I didn't do any better. All right, now what happened?
Human intervention.
Hey. We as free will beings can intrude on the natural process of cause and effect for reasons of our own using means at our disposal. When Mark tried to catch the ball, thank you, was he interrupting what would normally have happened to that ball had he not caught it? Okay. So we, as free will agents, can interrupt the natural flow of cause and effect. If God exists and he has his own means at his disposal, aren't miracles really the same thing?
Yeah.
A conscious being interrupting the natural flow of cause and effect for reasons of his own. Alan.
I'm just curious. The analogy, correct me if I'm wrong, but if you make an analogy, does that necessarily mean that the thing that you're making the analogy about is true?
If I make it, yes. If I make the analogy, it is.
No, I mean the analogy about the human intervening and then God intervenes. The human can intervene, right?
Sure.
I understand that. But does that necessarily, and I see the analogy, but does that necessarily mean that there is a God and God can intervene?
Well, no, but this is the argument that we can make. If we can, remember I was saying earlier, we got to talk about the issue of whether God exists or not. If God exists, why would he not be able to intervene in the universe that he created? Just like we can intervene, it's the same thing.
Why is he letting us go? Is he like a parent where the parent will say to the child, let him do what he wants, he'll find out the hard way, or he'll learn himself? So is that what God is doing with us? He's letting us learn through not intervening as much as maybe he could?
Isn't it interesting that the Bible talks about two characteristics of God? Is patience and mercy.
And long suffering.
I know I can only speak for myself, Alan. If God were much shorter in his mercy and patience, I would be dead. So I'm grateful for it. But yes, the answer is yes. I think that he lets us go for a while. We sort of learn stuff. We ask him for help. He intervenes. But yes, he lets us go for a long time sometimes.
He says, for God is patient, not slack concerning slackness, but is long patient, long suffering, slow to anger.
That's right. God uses miracles to communicate with us. I think that's the main purpose of them, and if he does them through means that break the physical laws, that's one thing. If he uses physical laws, it's really the same thing. He is interrupting the natural cause and effect flow to tell us something, to communicate with us. And I think this is the best answer to deism, to people who say, God just will give you that God created the universe, but he's gone off, he's on a 13.7 billion year vacation, and he's not intervening anymore. Well, I think God wants a relationship with us. If God wants a relationship with us, he's going to communicate with us. If he's going to communicate with us, that communication necessarily has to interrupt the natural flow of cause and effect, or otherwise we wouldn't recognize it. So somebody says that's what the deism argument, you can say, that doesn't work for a God who, God could have done it that way, but if God who wants to communicate with us, he's going to intervene, just like we intervene, just like Mark tried to catch the ball. I want to go back to this point. There is no need to discuss this stuff from a defensive position. I think our arguments are stronger. Make the argument, make the point, let them answer you, answer the best challenges that we have. Mara?
Paul, I'm a people, and I know
let all these people in Africa starve and who let the Holocaust happen, if he has miracles, if he made miracles. Well, I can't believe in a God like that.
Well, here's... Boy, you guys lead me right into my next point. It's perfect. Today we talked about why should we believe in miracles? How can we think about them? How do we argue for them? Next week, we're going to talk about how to answer the greatest challenges to miracles. So that's coming next week. Alan?
Well, I guess it's been mentioned, you know, some people will talk about the miracles, but I guess what...
Are you omnipresent? It's
miraculous. It's a miracle.
what I was going to say was that sometimes if you're in a car accident or something, and somebody might say it was a miracle, I was saved. It was a miracle. But of course if you're dead, it's not a miracle. So how do you explain that when somebody would say, "Oh, it was a miracle, I was saved," when I would just say you were lucky. Although this gentleman here said that there was an angel that
see, Alan, imagine for a minute that something like what this gentleman described or what I described actually had happened at some point in your life to you. Okay? And that was part of your memory and part of who you were. Wouldn't it be more likely then that when things happen that appear to be for a particular purpose, you would be much more willing to say that was a miracle, or that might have been a miracle. Well, see, it goes back to the worldview thing. If you don't have God in your consciousness, then there are no miracles.
So that's the premise you have to buy first, and then proceed from there. But when you were 9 years old, you said you saw your leg grow. Now, again, I'm just playing a skeptic here, but do you think, and I know mm-hmm. this has probably been said many times, do you think it could have been your imagination?
Well, the proof to me was that my hip was sore for weeks.
Right.
Okay.
Did you tell your parents? Did they know?
Well, they were there. They were in the room. I mean, they saw it. They saw it.
What did the people do?
Well, everybody was pretty shocked. I mean, needless to say, not as much as me, but, you know, people were shocked. So it was, I mean, if I didn't have pain in my hip, I remember this vividly, walking down the wide aisle at school, like limping, because my hip hurt. And thinking, well, yeah, my leg just grew. My whole body's got to get used to, you know, not leaning over or whatever it was doing.
Is this man still alive?
I have no idea.
So did he help me grow?
last question, and then we go.
What you just said, I've seen that up in a church in Asiana Heights from a guy from Australia. Came over there, and there was another younger gentleman, and his leg grew out front of all the church. So yes, God does work. I don't care what nobody says, the truth. You know?
I'll let you be the last word, sir.
I'm a mythbuster here. I'm a doctor, so I know what he's talking about, but I can ask it.
Okay. All right. Thank you, everybody.
Very good.